September 7th, 2012, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. A date that I think for a lot of folks, especially those who follow us at nextchapternews.com, really signifies the start of, well, a true crime story that kind of gripped the entire community.
Yeah.
A 19-year-old UNC sophomore by the name of Faith Hedgepeth.
Absolutely. A case that really shook what's typically a pretty peaceful, you know, college town. And as we kind of jump into this deep dive with you all, you know, I think it's really important to remember that Faith Hedgepeth, she was more than just like a headline. She was a bright young woman. She was a biology major. She was on scholarship, and she really had aspirations of becoming a pediatrician, maybe even a teacher. She also had very strong connections to her Heliwasaponi tribal roots, and those were, you know, a big part of who she was and her future aspirations. And from everything that we've read and heard, you know, she had this infectious smile, this spirit that really, you know, her mother described as bringing pure joy. So just underscores the tragedy of a promising life being cut short.
Yeah, and cut short so violently. And so to really kind of set the scene for our listeners here, yeah, we need to take everyone back to the night before this all happened. It seemed like a pretty typical Friday night for a college student, right?
Ooh.
Faith and her roommate, Karina Rosario, they attended a sorority rush event. And then later that night, they went to a nightclub called The Thrill.
Oh.
And then in the early morning hours, somewhere around 4:25 a.m., Karina actually left with her ex-boyfriend, a guy named Eric Decoy Jones. And this is what left Faith alone at their apartment.
Right. And then the next morning, what happened just, I mean, turned this whole thing into just this decade-long mystery. So around 11:03 a.m., Karina returns to the apartment.
Right.
This time, she's with a friend, Marisol Rangel, and they make a frantic 911 call saying there's blood everywhere.
Oh, wow.
So you can just imagine the scene that they walked into. It's horrific. Faith had been severely beaten. She was partially unclothed. The fatal blow appeared to be a fractured skull, probably caused by, well, we believe now, a Bacardi rum bottle that was found nearby.
And as the investigators start to piece things together for our nextchapternews.com readers, the crime scene really presented some disturbing clues. So there was blood spatter indicating a pretty violent struggle. There was a pool of blood found near Faith's body. A rape kit confirmed that a sexual assault had taken place and thankfully yielded semen. And then there was this white fast food bag with a handwritten note on it that read, "I'm not stupid bitch jealous."
Mm-hmm.
And the rum bottle, well, it had been wiped clean of fingerprints, but there was a single palm print left behind. And what really jumped out was that there was no sign of forced entry, which suggested this terrifying possibility. Faith might have known her attacker.
Yeah, I mean, that detail about the lack of forced entry, that's crucial, like you're pointing out. Because it really does kind of narrow down the focus of the investigation from the get-go. It suggests, you know, either Faith willingly let this person in, or maybe even, I don't know, the door was unlocked, you know, for someone that she didn't see as a threat. And then you add in the handwritten note. That just adds another layer to this whole puzzle because it kind of hints at a motive, you know, maybe something like jealousy. But at that point, I mean, nobody knew who wrote it or if it was even genuine. Like, what was the intent?
Right. And for 10 long years, the investigation just continued. Thousands of interviews, over 200 DNA samples collected. Early on, suspicion fell on Karina's ex-boyfriend, remember, Eric Decoy Jones.
Right.
But his DNA didn't match the evidence. And Karina's alibi, it checked out. In 2016, investigators even released a composite sketch that was based on the semen DNA profile, you know, hoping it would generate some new leads, but unfortunately it didn't really lead to any breakthroughs. So this case, despite all the initial effort and attention, it eventually went cold, and it really became kind of this haunting reminder of just so many unanswered questions.
I think it's the kind of case that really stays with you, especially in the true crime community.
Right.
You know, there's all this information at the start, and it feels like there's all these potential leads, but then it all just kind of hits a wall. And the public interest, like you said, it was huge. I mean, understandably so. You know, this young woman with so much potential, her life is taken in such a brutal way, and then there's just no answers for, like, almost a decade. It really felt like the truth might never come out.
It felt like we were never going to get to that next chapter for our readers.
Right, exactly.
But then, in 2021, almost a decade after Faith's murder, the case took this really dramatic turn. It shows just how much forensic technology has advanced. The Chapel Hill Police and the State Bureau of Investigation, the SBI, they turned to something called genetic genealogy. And I think for some of our listeners, this might be a newer concept, so let's break it down a bit. Basically, what they do is they take DNA evidence from a crime scene, In this case, we're talking about the semen, and they compare it to publicly available DNA databases, the kind that people use for ancestry tracing.
Right. It's not like they're trying to find an exact match in some criminal database.
Right.
What they're doing is looking for connections, like to distant relatives of the person who left that DNA behind. It's like they're building a family tree, but kind of in reverse. And by finding these genetic links, they can actually narrow down the pool of suspects in a really big way, which lets investigators focus their efforts. And in Faith's case, this technique was used to trace the DNA from the rape kit back to, get this, distant relatives of a man named Miguel Enrique Salguero Olivares.
And the confirmation, well, that came from some pretty classic detective work.
Oh, yeah.
Once they had a name, they could start interviewing family members, get voluntary DNA samples to see if there was a direct match to the evidence from the crime scene. And that's what they did. It led them straight to Salguero Olivares. And then remember that palm print on the rum bottle? Well, that's just solidified the connection even more.
I think what's so amazing about this is that you have this cutting edge science, but it was the more traditional detective work that really put everything together, the genetic genealogy that gave them the initial lead that had been missing for so long. But it was the follow-up, the interviews, the direct DNA comparison, and then that palm print that actually built a case strong enough for an arrest.
And that arrest came on September 16th, 2021, 9 years and 9 days after Faith's murder. And Miguel Enrique Salguero Olivares, who was 28 at the time, he was taken into custody at his home in Durham. He was charged with first-degree murder. I'm sure our listeners at nextchapternews.com remember that press conference was incredibly emotional. The Faith's mother, Connie Hedgepeth, she talked about her tears, her gratitude, and her father, Roland Hedgepeth. You know, he said it was a new beginning, and he really emphasized that he wanted his daughter to be remembered as a person, not just a victim.
And Chief Blue, you know, the police chief, I think he really summed it up well. He talked about the dedication of the investigators, how they never gave up on this case, and how DNA technology really can, like, bring some closure to these cold cases.
Right. And for our listeners who are just trying to understand, like, who is this guy? Who is Miguel Enrique Salguero Olivares? Well, at the time of the murder in 2012, he was 19. He was an immigrant from Guatemala, having arrived in the U.S. in 2010. He worked as a painter and he lived in Durham. But here's the thing. He had ties to Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. He used to live in an apartment complex on Ephesus Church Road. And he was not a UNC student. His mother actually denied his involvement completely. She said, you know, he didn't even know Faith.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest mysteries here. You know, what was the connection between Salguero Olivares and Faith? Or was there even one at all? And a private investigator, Hunter Glass, who had been working on the case independently, he said that Salguero Olivares' name, it had actually come up earlier in his investigation. He was maybe at a party near Faith's apartment around the time of the murder. But Glass also said that he didn't really stand out at the time. And it's important to remember that, like, law enforcement hasn't officially confirmed this possible link.
And for those of you who've been really paying attention to the details on nextchapternews.com, there's another interesting piece here. So about a month before his arrest in the Hedgepeth case, Salguero Olivares was actually arrested for DUI, driving under the influence, in Raleigh. His blood alcohol level was really high, and he told the police that he was working at a pizzeria at the time. And after his arrest in Faith's murder, the police got search warrants for his apartment, and they took a bunch of stuff, like 6 cell phones and a laptop, which really suggests that they were looking for digital evidence, you know, anything that could shed light on the crime.
And, you know, in this day and age, cell phones, computers, they hold so much information, you know, communication, location data, search history. So the fact that they took multiple devices, it shows how thorough they're being in this investigation.
Okay, so now let's fast forward to November 2024. Additional charges are filed against Salguero Olivares, first-degree burglary, rape, and sexual offense. They're saying he not only murdered Faith, but also broke into her apartment and sexually assaulted her. And now, here we are, March 16th, 2025. The case is still waiting for trial. And it sounds like the huge amount of evidence is one of the big reasons for the delay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're talking over 39,000 pages of documents, hours of audio and video recordings, and they might even have up to 30 expert witnesses who could be called to testify. The assistant district attorney back in 2023, they said that the discovery, and by that we mean the evidence that the prosecution has to share with the defense, is just massive. And then you have all the forensic testing and digital analysis. I mean, it takes time to process all that.
Yeah. And the defense attorneys, they actually said they were ready for trial back in January this year, 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And the DA's office, they moved the case into trial prep. But there's still no official trial date. You can imagine this is just incredibly frustrating for Faith's family. Her father, Roland Hedgebeth, he spoke out about it in 2023, talking about the uncertainty and the toll it's taking.
And, you know, I can't even imagine what they're going through.
Yeah.
The legal system, it moves so slowly. And for a family that's grieving, that's waiting for answers, it must be agonizing. And even though the DA has said they're not seeking the death penalty, making it a non-capital case, they haven't said when the trial might start. They did say in 2024 that murder cases, they just take time to work through the system.
And, you know, I think it's also crucial for our listeners to understand the bigger picture here. Faith Hedgepeth's murder really brought attention to the issue of violence against Indigenous women. Even District Attorney Dauberry acknowledged this back in 2021. She talked about how Indigenous women face much higher rates of violence and murder than other groups.
And this is so important because while the details of Faith's case are unique, they also reflect this much larger and really disturbing pattern. The statistics are alarming. And I think this case, it's a reminder that we need to do more to understand this issue and do something about it.
And even though the legal case is still going on, you know, Faith's memory is being honored in so many ways. There are memorials at UNC. Her tribe has held vigils. And I think these acts of remembrance are so important. They keep her spirit alive in the community.
Absolutely. They offer a way for people to grieve together and to hope for justice.
Exactly. And as we continue to follow this case for you on nextchapternews.com, there are some really big questions that still haven't been answered. Was Miguel Enrique Salguero Olivares acting alone? If he was, what was his motive? I mean, there was no known connection to Faith. Was this a crime of jealousy, or was it something else entirely? And that private investigator, remember he mentioned a possible broader involvement. Well, that hasn't been confirmed, but it does raise some interesting questions. And what about the note, the rum bottle, the DNA evidence? How's all that going to be presented in court?
Those are all questions that the trial will hopefully answer. The prosecution, they have to present a clear narrative that shows that Salguero Olivares is guilty. They'll use the physical evidence, any digital evidence, and they'll try to explain his motive. And of course, the defense, well, they'll try to poke holes in the prosecution's story. They'll try to raise doubts.
So as of today, March 16th, 2025, Faith Hedgepeth's story is still a story of loss and waiting for justice. An arrest has been made, but the trial is still pending. Faith's family, the community, they're all still waiting. We here at nextchapternews.com will keep following this story closely and bring you any updates.
It's just a reminder that even though an arrest is a huge step, it's not the end of the story.
Right.
For Faith's family, the wait for the trial, for the answers, for some sense of closure, that wait goes on. And their strength, their resilience, it's really incredible.
And as we wrap up this deep dive for nextchapternews.com, here's something for everyone listening to think about. This case, it really shows us just how complicated these cold case investigations can be and how new technology like genetic genealogy can make a huge difference. But it also shows how long the road to justice can be. And it's a reminder that cases like Faith's, they often have connections to even bigger problems like violence against Indigenous women. So stay informed, folks. You can find updates on this case and other important stories right here at nextchapternews.com.